This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Annette Bening, is nominated for an Oscar for her starring role in the new film Being Julia. It's her second nomination. The first was for her performance in American Beauty. Her other memorable roles include The President's Girlfriend in The American President and the femme fatale in Bugsy, the movie where she met her husband, Warren Beatty. In her new movie, Being Julia, Bening stars as a celebrated British stage actress in 1938. To her fans, her life appears full and quite elegant. But the truth is, her relationship with her husband, who is also her producer, has become platonic, and she's worried that she's grown too old for the kind of leading lady parts that made her famous. Things start looking up when she has an affair with a much younger man. Their relationship even gives her an idea for her next play. Here she is with her friend Lord Charles at a museum viewing a portrait of herself. Lord Charles, played by Bruce Greenwood, is about to leave on a long trip. He figures she'll be busy reading scripts looking for new plays to perform.
As a matter of fact, there is a play that interests me. It's about an older woman who has an affair with a younger man.
Oh, a farce.
Why do you say that?
Well, because everyone laughs at the older woman.
No, not in this play. It's rather serious. The Act One curtain's good. Comes as a shock to her.
What does?
That she's fallen in love with the boy. And it happens just when everything seemed to her so dull and unpromising, as if her life was over. She finds the affair exhilarating. And everyone keeps telling her she looks 10 years younger.
I trust she doesn't confess to the boy that she loves him. That's always fatal.
Does it sound like something for me?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Julia. No, your public would never stand for it. If such a woman asked me, I know what advice I would give her.
What?
Break it off at once, it'll only end in tears.
But, Charles, she can't do that.
Why ever not?
Because she's fallen in love with him, that's why. She's helpless. The character in the play.
Annette Bening, welcome to Fresh Air. What are some of the interesting aspects of playing an actress so that we see you on stage and we see you off stage? So, sometimes you're in character for your character and sometimes you're just your character. How much more confusing can I make this?
I don't know if I have a good way of addressing that. I think the fun part and the part that when I looked at the script, I was just so excited by it, was that it does take place in the theater. It's kind of where I started as an actor. It's why I wanted to be an actor. And that combined with the fact that you see so many private moments, I think that's one thing that movies have over just about anything else in terms of trying to show us ourselves, is these kinds of private moments that a camera can sneak into. So not only is this woman, you know, this incredible diva, she's on the stage, she's acting her heart out, but also you just see her when she's kind of stripped down to nothing.
Some actors are always on. I mean, some people become performers because they see life as theater, and they're always on, and they always want to be on stage and the center of attention. But I think other performers are actually kind of shy, and when they're not on stage, they're just different. I mean, they're not necessarily larger than life when they're off stage. I think for your character in the movie, she sees life as theater. She is usually on even when she's off stage. What about you?
No, I don't see myself as someone who's always on. Maybe it's because I also have a life where I have so many responsibilities and things that I do that are outside of working and acting. But I agree with you about actors, and I find it very interesting that some actors are much more introverted and shy. I know I feel much more comfortable and always have when I'm working. If I'm working, acting, doing on a stage, or if I'm on a set and I'm working and I'm the center of attention, that to me feels normal and comfortable or appropriate, I guess is the word. In life, just being me, being the center of attention, sometimes I find very uncomfortable.
Can you explain that difference? Why you're uncomfortable having attention off stage?
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because I can remember when I first started, I was doing only theater for a number of years, and I started getting interested in movies because I would see a good movie and I would think, oh, God, that's so powerful and someone has to be in them and maybe someday I could. But I had been working as an actress on the stage. I didn't have an agent. I didn't know how to go to interviews. And I remember coming to Los Angeles for the first time, and I didn't even stay, but I sort of came and visited and met a few people, and they would say, well, just go in and be yourself. And I would find that very intimidating. I felt like, well, if you give me a script, I know what to do. I know how to do that. That I'm comfortable doing. But just chatting with people, I didn't understand why that was important. I do understand why it's important now, especially in front of a camera, why it's important to just have a conversation with someone and see what they sound like, how they move, what are their rhythms, what is their kind of nature. But I didn't really even understand that then.
You made your first movie when you were 30, which is comparatively late for an actress who is really well known for her movie career. Why was it so comparatively late that you made your movie debut?
I wanted to be a classical actress. It's why I started. I really knew nothing about the theater or acting when I started. I just went to a play in San Diego where I was growing up. My English teacher took our class to a play at the Old Globe Theater, and I fell in love with the kind of marriage of ideas and emotion that seemed to be going on, and I loved watching the actors, and I liked the sweat on their faces and the sound of their voices, and it was Shakespeare, and the whole thing just kind of seemed very exciting. So I began to get interested in it, and I began to do plays when I was in junior high and high school, and that's how it sort of started. So coming around to movies, I didn't watch movies thinking about being a movie star or a movie actor. I just thought about being on the stage, and my heroes were people like Eva Le Gallien and Eleonora Duse, and those were the people that I would read about. And then a lot of the English actresses, Judi Dench and Maggie Smith, and people that were on the stage in England who came from repertory. And so I went to San Francisco State. I got a theater degree, and then I went to a conservatory in San Francisco at a theater there called the American Conservatory Theater. Out of college, I went there, and in between, I was doing Shakespeare festivals. So that's sort of where I got my start. That's what I wanted to do, and it wasn't until later that I began seriously thinking about, well, maybe trying to go to L.A. or New York and trying to get an agent and trying to start doing movies.
So how did you engineer your transition into movies?
When I was in acting school, they had auditions which they would hold at the end of the year, and they would take the graduating class from what they called the professional theater training programs across the country, and they would do a showcase in New York. So there were four of us in my class from ACT. We were about to go into the company, so we'd had 2 years of training. We were about to go into our third year, which is basically when you get your equity card, your stage union card, and you get to be in the company. But at that point, we were all taken to New York, and we did like a 20-minute showcase along with all these other schools where they invite casting directors and agents and anybody else who wants to come and look at these, you know, the graduating classes of all the acting schools. So I met a bunch of agents, and I met a gentleman named David Guss, who at the end of the day, and by that time I'd met so many people and I was so exhausted that I didn't sort of have the energy to pretend to do what I thought I was supposed to do when I met people, and I just sort of talked to him, and he said, you know, I'd like to represent you. And I said, well, you know, I've now been asked to be a part of this company, this theater company in San Francisco, being asked to do great roles, and I want to do that. So someday I'd like to come to New York, but I don't know exactly when, but not now. And he said, well, keep in touch with me. So that's what I did. And I would call him like once a year, and I was then at ACT doing roles, and I would just check in with him. I did a couple more seasons there, and then I did a season at the Denver Center Theater Company, another regional theater. And then I called him up, and I said, I'm ready to come to New York. And he said, okay. And he kept his word, and he signed me when I went to New York. So I just started going out on auditions.
Let's talk about one of your early films. And this is The Grifters, which you made in 1990. And this is a film. John Cusack is a small-time con man, and he's caught between his mother, who's a real scam artist. And then he meets you, and you're a con artist, too. So he's kind of, in a way, trapped between these two women, his mother and you. And I want to play a scene from the film. And this is, at this point, you're telling Cusack that you have a new scheme, and you want him to be your partner in it.
Caroline, guess what? I had to tell you right away. I called a fellow I know in Tulsa, the one who plays my chauffeur. He says that there's a sucker there that's made for us. And a broker that just shut down. We can use their office, not change a thing. Now, I can scrape up 10 grand if I try. I got a couple of aces in the hole. Some markers I could call on for something real. That leaves 15 or 20 for your end. We can start this weekend. Get the sucker into position.
Hold it. Now, you're talking some pretty tall figures. What makes you think I got that kind of money?
Why, you must have. Now you know you do, Roy.
Maybe I like it where I am.
Well, maybe I don't. I had 10 good years with Cole, and I want him back. I gotta have a partner. I looked and I looked, and believe me, brother, I kissed a lot of frogs, and you're my prince.
Do I get any say in this?
No, because...
That's what I say. What I say is no, we're not two partners.
That's a scene from The Grifters. Annette Bening, did you go back and watch a lot of film noir before performing in The Grifters?
I did watch some. Stephen Frears, who directed the picture, gave me some ideas. He also had me watch a lot of Gloria Graham, and she was a wonderful actress who did a number of those film noirs, and there was something particular about her that he liked, and then I began to kind of fall in love with. She's a very interesting person as well, her own personal life. But I also felt that in that particular character, in that picture, the style of it was really influenced by the costume designer. His name was Richard Hornung. He's passed away, but he was a great designer. And I just, every once in a while, you go into a fitting for a film, especially, and you feel like the designer hands you the character. In a way, I think Hornung did that because he had such a specific eye and a specific idea for Angelica as well, and Angelica looked incredible in the picture. So those costumes, and also I completely changed the way I looked. I cut my hair, I dyed it, and I did all this stuff, so that helps.
You know, you said that the clothing really gave you a sense of the character. Of course, there's one scene in which you're wearing absolutely nothing, and this is a scene where your landlord wants the rent, you're really behind, and you kind of invite him into your apartment. He walks in, you're laying there naked in bed, waiting for him, and he says, I need the money, and you say, oh, it's over there, and you point to the far end of the room where the money is, and you basically offer him the choice of, you know, the rent money or you. And, you know, it's a very seductive scene, one of several seductive scenes in it, and it made me wonder, before you became an actress, were you familiar with that sense of using your body in such an overtly seductive way? It's something you see all the time in the movies, but I always wonder if the actresses who know how to do that in movies really have lived any of their life that way.
No, Terry, I have to say, I probably could say pretty safely no, I had never experienced anything like that. I thought that the comedic nature of the moments in which Myra, if I remember her name right, Myra in The Grifters, was naked, it seemed right. And because it was comedic, it seemed particularly appropriate. And so doing it actually was pretty liberating. That moment, though, when the guy actually ends up jumping on top of me, that was not my favorite moment, but there's another moment, there's another scene where John's actually chasing me around. I'd forgotten about it, and then I saw it recently and thought, wow. Yeah, he sort of chases me around a room, throws me over his shoulder and everything. No, it was actually very liberating at the time, yeah.
Liberating in what sense?
Taking your clothes off, running around, mm-hmm, it was liberating. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's the big deal, you know?
Right, right. My guest is Annette Bening. She's nominated for an Oscar for her starring role in Being Julia. Let's talk about Bugsy. And this is the movie in which you met your husband, Warren Beatty. And he plays, you know, Ben Siegel, Bugsy Siegel, who builds up a lot of Vegas. And you play Virginia Hill, who, you know, becomes his lover. Now, this is a scene from when you first meet. And he's just met you. He's very interested in you. You've walked away. He's just found out from his friend that you are actually the girlfriend of Joey Adonis. And he, you know, Bugsy walks back in your direction and has this conversation with you.
Look, you're Ben Siegel and I'm Virginia Hill, okay? Yeah. Now, why are you so interested in a gal who's going with your friend?
What friend? Joey A. He's no friend of mine. He's an associate of an associate. Are you still going with him?
If it were New Year's Eve, he would be my date. Who would your date be?
Wife.
Wife?
Esther.
Esther?
Esther. E-S-T-A.
Good. Let me guess. I'll bet Esther lives her life faithful to her one and only Ben, who plays around like a jackrabbit on the side and lies about it through his teeth.
I don't lie to Esther.
That's noble. What do? Confess your sins three times a day? Now, what exactly does Mr. Esther want from Miss Virginia?
Right now, Mr. Esther is having a tremendous amount of difficulty imagining anything he doesn't want from Miss Virginia.
Are you ready for a divorce, Mr. Siegel?
Never.
Well, my oh my, you're pretty ferocious where Mom's concerned, aren't you?
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you're just another good-looking, sweet-talking, charm-oozing, happy fellow with nothing to offer but some dialogue. Dialogue's cheap in Hollywood, Ben. Why don't you run outside and jerk yourself a soda?
That's a scene from Bugsy. My guest is Annette Bening. When you auditioned for this movie, did you have any sense that by the time the movie was over that you would be soon to marry Warren Beatty? I mean, did you have a sense that this was going to be that kind of chemistry?
Actually, by the time I was meeting people at this point in the work, I didn't audition. So I went and met with Barry Levinson.
You were past that.
Yeah, exactly. At that point, I was just like meeting with people and I didn't have to read, although I would have, I'm sure, if they'd asked me. Anyway, so I just met with Barry Levinson first. I had a drink with him and then I met Warren for lunch. So then I guess it was after that that they asked me to do the picture. No, the answer is no, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Is it ever confusing when you're doing a role with someone and it's a role where the two characters fall in love? Is it ever confusing what emotions you're feeling like from the character and what emotions are real?
A friend of mine, I remember when I was working in the theater, called it scene spill.
It's scene spill. I like that.
Scene spill. I know it's a great expression. Let's see. No, I don't think so. I think really down deep, no, I think you kind of know you're pretending or you know it's real life. And what's interesting, too, about chemistry on screen, I don't think there's any way of knowing when chemistry will work and when it won't work and what that is. It's a very intangible quality when you're watching something and you see two people and there is that magical thing happening between them on screen, because I've done pictures that you know wasn't necessarily going on between me and the other actor at all. Not that we weren't friendly, but it wasn't like there was any kind of romance going on, and it seems like it kind of sparkles and works, and then other times it doesn't. So it's a funny quality to try to capture.
Were you willing to admit to yourself that you actually felt something for him before the film was over? Because I could see how like real feelings could interfere with the making of a movie, because real feelings could also end. Real feelings could be combustible. And you don't, I mean, if you're serious about making a movie, you don't want that to intrude on the reality of
the
movie.
Yeah, what if it ends before the movie ends, right?
Exactly. Well, no, exactly.
No, it's a problem. No. I began to know as we were making the picture that there was something going on between us, for sure. I mean, we were discreet about it and we were, you know, kept quiet about it. But yeah, you know, we started to fall in love. So yeah, that was going on. But I think in general, people, you know, all of us are very careful about those relationships and having to, draw the line and draw a distinction between what is pretend and what isn't.
Let's talk about another movie that you made, American Beauty, and you were nominated for an Oscar for your role in this. And this movie is kind of part comedy, part drama. Your character is very unhappy, but I don't think she recognizes how unhappy she is. It's like she's protecting herself from her own unhappiness. And she's the kind of character who wants everything ordered, everything in place, everything cheerful, but there's no way she can fulfill that ambition in her marriage, in her home anymore. And this is a scene where you, your husband, played by Kevin Spacey, and your teenage daughter are at the dinner table. There's a real chill in the air.
Sorry, I'm late.
No, that's quite all right, dear. Your father and I were just discussing his day at work. Why don't you tell our daughter about it, honey?
Janie, today I quit my job. And then I told my boss to go f*** himself, and then I blackmailed him for almost $60,000. Pass the asparagus.
Your father seems to think this kind of behavior is something to be proud of.
And your mother seems to prefer that I go through life like a f***ing prisoner while she keeps my d*** in a mason jar under the sink.
How dare you speak to me that way in front of her? And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone pass the asparagus.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner now.
I already have a job.
No, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. We'll just leave it all up to Carolyn. You mean you're going to take care of everything now, Carolyn? Yes, I don't mind. I really don't. You mean everything? You don't mind having the sole responsibility? Your husband feels he can just quit his job and you don't...
Will someone please pass me the
guys, I'm not going to be a part of this.
Shut up!
That's a scene from American Beauty. My guest is Annette Bening. What was it like to figure out how to play this character and how sympathetic to make her? You know, because we're seeing a lot of the movie through the eyes of Kevin Spacey because, you know, he narrates the movie. So you tend to see the movie through the eyes of the narrator, which would mean that when he's really annoyed with you, we're annoyed with you. So what was it like to figure out how sympathetic to play her?
It's really interesting. I guess it's one of the pleasures of acting is that once you take a character on, you are their advocate in a way. You are their defender, and that's your job. And I love that about the work, especially with someone like Carolyn Burnham, who's not completely sympathetic to the world. And a lot of people really disliked her and disliked the character, I know, because they'll say things to me. People will say, you know, that she was a villain or whatever. So I took a lot of pleasure in her because I did feel, as you mentioned before, that she was really fighting for her life. She was fighting for what she wanted. She wasn't always very good at it and didn't use effective ways of getting what she wanted, but she was trying. And I did fall in love with her, and I still feel that sympathy for her. That is, you know, that's that, and that love that you feel for your character, it does become that. It becomes, and so it does become hard to explain, because it has that nature of just being kind of deep in your gut, that you feel for them. You are fighting for their point of view. You're fighting for their side, and all good actors do that, and that's what makes good movies. If everybody's in there fighting and it's well written and the characters are all in there fighting for what they want and those things clash, then you've got interesting dramatic problems.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Annette Bening. She's nominated for an Oscar for her leading role in Being Julia. You are now the mother of four. So you have your hands full in private life. Your children age from, what, age 4 to 13 or something like that?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what balance do you think you want in your life between, you know, being a mother and having your career?
I think balance is it makes sense, but in a way I think it's kind of overrated. Actually, creativity, I think, comes from excess, and that's probably the trickiest part of wanting to have a life with children where you have this responsibility and you want to be there for them and take care of them in the way that they need, but then you also want to find a way to keep track of what's going on inside of you creatively in your own separate creative evolution, and you need excess in a way for that. So I feel lucky because I can do it and I can do both. I get to do movies and also have my life with my children. I don't think I'd be good at only working, going from project to project or play to movie or whatever. I think for me, it makes much more sense and works much better to have all of these responsibilities. So I feel lucky that I can do that. You know, having spent a lot of time when I was in a position where I was just trying to get work, to be in a position where I can choose to work or not work feels like a privilege. And with film, then when I do go, like I made a movie about a year ago and I'm about to start a film in March, then when I do go in to shoot a picture, I feel like I can really focus on it because it's been a year, again, since I was actually shooting every day. And that becomes an incredible experience for me and a real joy and a real challenge. And I don't feel like I'm doing the wrong thing because I'm not always doing it.
I really like what you said about people always talking about balance. But, you know, in some lines of work, it's not about moderation. It's really about throwing yourself into it.
Yeah, and that's important, and that's what's tricky, because as a mom, you do want to be balanced to a degree, right? You want to be consistent, and you want to be there for your children in a way that they can feel safe and predictable, and that's important for children, and they deserve that, but that there's a dichotomy there between that and what you're trying to do you know, in your creative life.
A couple like you and Warren Beatty are probably, you know, as close as it gets in America to royalty. Do you know what I mean? Because the level of celebrity is kind of on a par with what royalty might be in another country. And it seems to me that that must be a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a perfect way of putting it. It is. The part where, you know, people say royalty, I mean, that's something that's like, it's a story that people kind of make up because it doesn't really have anything to do with us personally or the way we live our lives or any of that. So I guess that's the tricky part of becoming known on any degree, that you deal with people's ideas of you and projections that people have about you. I'm sure you deal with that on the radio, people, how people conceive of you versus how you really are or how you see yourself. So I do think a certain amount of sorting through that helps when you can kind of say, okay, that's someone's idea of me versus who I really am.
Well, Annette Bening, I want to thank you very much for talking with us, and I wish you good luck at the Oscars.
Thanks for having me.
Annette Bening is nominated for an Oscar for her starring role in Being Julia.